This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, 19th of May, 2021. And yesterday we're seeing, and overnight, we're seeing risk sentiment swinging back to the negative. We won't try to gin up a narrative on what the proximate cause is here, but we had seen that pretty spectacular comeback from the lows. If you look at the case of the S&P 500, Europe perhaps even more so recently, and its comeback. But for perspective on slide two, I think the interesting thing to note here is that we're about mid-range from the bottom to the top of the last few days, the last week of trading, we can call it. So we have that major pivot low there, about 4,040 there. And if we do look at that low, that would be the first time we've tested a pivot of that magnitude or of that order since the other line I've drawn in there at a level I can't quite see because of my need for a new eyeglass prescription back in March of last year. And you can see that reversal, we broke that pivot and just immediately the day after rose above that. So it's been a really long time since we've properly tested any of these support levels. And then I think maybe the interesting thing to point out on the weekly, which I've got, if you'll jump to slide four.
That's a very long-term chart.
It's not that long-term. It's the 5-year. It's our obligatory
I'm just kidding.
Compliance chart there. But just looking at the weekly, the stochastics on the weekly, you can see a trend line there that could be interesting kind of coming into play. That kind of trend line obviously has already broken down on the NASDAQ 100. I heard a comment. We haven't really discussed a lot this session, recent couple of sessions here, Peter, but I heard you commenting on something about there's a lot of interesting sort of internal bits and pieces and movements that are not sort of something you can't really see just from looking at the broader index moves.
Yeah, I would say broadly, I think both you and I, we have this feeling that a lot of energy has been sucked out of the market, cross markets. Actually, it's not only currencies, it's also fixed income. Really tight range in the US 10-year. You're seeing it also in Europe, Eurostox 50 futures, slide three. I mean, we have erased all the gains we got on Friday, getting very close to that opening on Friday. If we take that out, I mean, we could go even lower in European equity. So we are in a tight range there as well. So, and if you look at the broader indices, the past two or three sessions, we have had the price action of mild moves in the broader indices, but beneath the calm surface, we have had all these equity baskets that we're tracking. Again, slide three, the insert to the upper left corner. You can see that again yesterday you had bubble stocks, green transformation, e-commerce, all baskets up between 2 and 2.5%, while the MSCI World did nothing, which is basically mildly down for the session. So I think that's interesting because it's always when you have these divergences that you're getting, I think, some interesting piece of information. And then also, we talked about it on our internal call, John. The semiconductor situation—it's not getting better.
It's really interesting there.
Yeah, Susquehanna, and kudos to Bloomberg for pushing this story this morning. You can see that it's the small insert in the lower hand right corner there. They are tracking the lead time. So basically, from you order a computer chip to you're getting it delivered, and as you can see from Susquehanna, it's just going up and up and up and up, and it's the highest since late 2017. It's 17 weeks now for order, and the latest estimates are that the global car industry will lose somewhere around $110 billion in sales from this, and it could probably get much higher if this indicator from Susquehanna is not fading very soon. And I think that will be very interesting given we haven't talked about it yesterday, but the Michael Burry, this the famous character from the Big Short. He's not that he was very successful during the Great Financial Crisis. You can be a one-trick pony. But I don't know. We will see. But he has put out this massive put options bet on Tesla worth something around $500 million or so, betting on Tesla's demise. And Tesla was step dancing very nicely through the Q1 chip shortage by, I think they wrote some new firmware so they could integrate with other chip manufacturers that were probably a little bit less quality than the ones they're using, etc. Very complicated, but they did a very fine job on that. But I'm really wondering how this crisis in semiconductors is impacting Tesla and this short trade from
I think we've discussed it before, but this whole approach of this hyper optimization of your supply chains and just in time type of deliveries, where everything is just so geared up towards not having any inventory, so that you get the maximum boost to your earnings and the least bit of latency, or the minimizing the latency on your balance sheet from this stuff that's sitting around. And this kind of event is going to cause the opposite. You're going to see car manufacturers not wanting to be caught in the next cycle with their pants down on this issue. And you'll have hoarding, I would guess. And so I would suspect that this these delivery times are going to remain extremely high as we get stockpiling behavior rather than the former just-in-time type of optimization.
Yeah, and we should actually say that there's been some, I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday, we got these numbers on sales to inventory numbers, and you know, they just off the chart. I mean, we were looking at a multi-decade,
inventory to sales ratio.
Yeah, sorry, inventory to sales ratio just plunged. So
we're towards historic lows of that data series.
Yeah, exactly. Which goes back to 2002, something like that. We're just running out of inventory basically, and I have some more interesting nuggets on that one when we talk earnings from yesterday from Home Depot. But I think we should talk about crypto, John, because there is the action.
For those that are trading crypto, plenty of action overnight. Once again, it's kind of funny to see this sort of trigger rolled out in the headlines that it was the PBOC apparently just reiterating something that's already said before: the digital tokens are not permissible for use in any financial transactions. Regardless, this unleashed a new bout of selling, and some really interesting technical stuff shaping up here that I want to look at here on slide 5, just for Bitcoin itself. And really the most interesting thing about this sell-off overnight is it's really broad-based, and some of the other smaller coins that were, showing some holdout, like Cardano, these other coins, so-called third generation. You can hear I'm not the a crypto expert, but they were selling off with a higher percentage than Bitcoin itself. But let's look at the technicals here for the granddaddy, Bitcoin, still the dominant and largest coin. So we're testing the 200-day moving average for the first time since May of last year. I think it was May anyway, where it was broken below in the reaction to the pandemic, and just everything was, everybody was panic deleveraging. Broke back above that in May of last year. So that's first of all, that's a big test, the 200-day moving average. You also have the break of a head and shoulders formation, very nicely carved out, that I've put on the neckline there on slide 5. It's a tilting neckline, so you can't really talk about what levels. But if you look at the classic definition of what the resolution of this type of formation is, once it's broken, it's 100% of the height of the overall structure. And then that would put us at 100% target right at, hold on to your hats, that's the lows we were seeing back in January. And the exact lows there were where we closed the year in 2020. So that's the year-to-date, essentially, line. There you're seeing right around 29,000. So 29,000, I mean, of course, this level here around 39,000 to 40,000 is critical because of the 200-day moving average, et cetera. But if we are continuing to deleverage, that's a titanic focus there on the $29,000 level for Bitcoin.
I personally, from an equities perspective, think that the interesting angle on Bitcoin is that we know from surveys in the US that there's a huge overlap of young investors age below 35 that have a huge overlap of positions across cryptocurrencies, Tesla, Cathie Wood's ARK Invest, Square. So that you have this whole risk cluster, and we've talked about it endlessly a couple of months back when it was kicking into gear. And my angle here is, to what degree the sell-off in crypto spooks
contagion
risk, basically spooks these new investors that have piling into crypto, because it's never fun to look at losses. And I'm just wondering whether it could set in motion something bigger in these very isolated pockets. So again, we're talking about Tesla, so we're going back again to this Michael Burry short position. And so I think it's a story that we need to track if Bitcoin really go much further south.
And you almost can't make it up. But Tesla as well has been trading right here on this 200-day moving average in the high 500s. Very interesting setup, as you mentioned. There's also the whole aspect that we had Monday was the tax deadline in the U.S. We've had an incredible year for returns on a lot of speculative assets. people that are filing their claims, realizing what their tax bill is. And, you know, it doesn't mean that that had to happen before May 17th. They could be selling to rebalance their accounts, basically, after having to make a surprisingly large tax payment. Who knows? That aspect could be feeding through here in these days, and maybe for a week or two. I don't know, but that's just one consideration. And so far, this sell in May and go away, at least for some assets, has been quite a saying. You could argue the S&P is hardly corrected at all, the headline levels. All right. Just moving to FX briefly, with the bit of risk off yesterday, the smaller currencies underperforming a bit. Dollar a little bit resilient there, even though the headline is that Eurodollar broke to new highs. So I'll get to that in a moment. But we have to talk a little bit about Dollar Canada, testing the lows and actually slightly below those lows intraday yesterday from back in 2017. So we're talking about a six-year low that was traded briefly yesterday. 120, a massive psychological level. A lot of the argument here is that we're trading on if you look at the two-year spread, the rate spread between U.S. and Canada, it's close to those lows from March, but also back in those lows in 2017. I really have a hard time swallowing Dollar Canada making further progress lower here. I'm getting contrarian at these levels. Let's see what happens. Maybe one bullish argument could be, or at least contrarian argument could be, the stochastics divergence. So a bit of momentum divergence you're seeing there on a measure like that. You can see that on slide six. And apropos that, we have as well, crude oil selling off quite sharply yesterday, not exactly supporting the Canadian dollar, but we have the April CPI release up today out of Canada. Could be interesting. Of course, there the CPI pressures there, the headline expected at 3%+. But you have to imagine the inflationary pressures lower in it for a currency that's been going nearly vertical for several months.
Yeah, and talking about the CPI, we just got PPI input prices for UK manufacturers this morning in Europe, and they're getting very close to 10% year-over-year gain. That's the highest on record for this time series going back to 2008, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and CPI in UK, quite a contrast to the US, where we're seeing the month-on-month number, though, certainly worth noting, 0.6%. That was expected, but still 0.6% print month on month is quite a large jump. But the year on year was in line with expectations. Now I'm forgetting the exact number, but it was irrelevant, 1.5-1.6%. So just the contrast there between what's going on there and then in the US. Okay, trend overview. The interesting thing about the Eurodollar breaking higher is, of course, that it did so. And that sets the last major resistance level of that cycle top near 123.50 from back in January. It's looking more like a euro rally here locally, more than a dollar sell-off. And curious to see if we do get a deepening risk sell-off and risk sentiment, if these bond yields can hold up where they are. And that's been one of the drivers, the focus on a more optimistic outlook for Europe. Bond yields rising to the top to new highs and basically trading and closing near the highs for the cycle yesterday around minus 10 basis points. We have a couple of interesting risks up ahead that I'll get to in a moment, but that does look the driver, the relative shift in optimism and yields in Europe relative to the range-bound U.S. treasuries. And we still have that gold and silver rally looking quite impressive over there on the far right on the trend overview. And on the negative side, you have the dollar trying to catch up with the yen. Brief note, though, as well, I mean, Aussie just struggling in the range there, has managed to do absolutely nothing all year long. And to me, looking like we have some signs of wobbles in the iron ore futures as a key support for the Aussie. So I'm wondering if it's vulnerable as well, especially, of course, if we get an extension of this weak risk sentiment. But let's get back to earnings. We've still got plenty on the calendar for the rest of the week. And as you noted, especially with the U.S. housing market on fire, we've had some interesting names reporting and about to report there.
Yeah, so I would start by focusing on what happened yesterday. We had Walmart and Home Depot both smashing estimates, very strong results, both raised the sales forecast for this year, again, proving that analysts are too pessimistic, at least here in the short term. And I think there are some interesting nuggets on inflation from Home Depot. Nothing, they don't seem very concerned. It seems like both Walmart and Home Depot are using the same economists, because they're both saying between the lines that they expect these inflationary pressures to be transitory and will calm down. But just look at the current piece of information from the earnings call from Home Depot is the one I've highlighted on slide 8 in with yellow markers there. So their sheet of 7/6/10 OSB or plywood was you could get that for a little bit less than $10 at the end of the first quarter last year, and the end of this year's first quarter you paid almost $40. So that's a factor of 4 increase right there, and obviously that's boosting their sales. They also saying that, you know, if you look at a company like Black & Decker, they expected to lose $250 million just alone this year from commodity increase in steel and copper, etc. So I'm not sure this inflation story is over yet, but we'll have to see about that. And then I'm focusing today on JD.com. The emerging market equities really need a boost, and the only boost they can get is from China. So that's also the chart you're seeing there as the insert. The JD.com has really, together with the rest of the Chinese equity market, taking quite a hit. And if we get to get any hope of emerging markets recovering here and outperforming again, we need the Chinese equity market to turn around. And let's see what happens with JD.com today. Lowe's is a competitor to Home Depot. I expect similar results. And then I'm highlighting as well this title. I said it the other day that Cathie Wood have been loading up on a lot of Chinese technology names. I know Steve Jacobson, our CIO, I also mentioned it, that they getting extremely cheap relative to US technology peers. And it now turns out that George Soros is also picking up some of the names, including Baidu, which reported yesterday very strong results in the US session there. So you have Soros and Cathie Wood teaming up on being long China. Very interesting.
Very interesting. And as well, I would say interesting, the Supplied Materials, they are the makers of sort of the foundry equipment that actually makes the chips. It'd be interesting to see what they're saying about forward demand, I would guess, considering the focus on the semiconductor shortage. Couple of interesting, if we go to the macro highlights for today, a couple of interesting things to pull out. Again, I mentioned the Canadian CPI already, but we have a 20-year treasury auction. We've had the U.S. treasury market very quiet here at the long end of the curve. Really critical for signals there. I would suspect if we're going lower in yields, it's probably a reflection of safe haven seeking. If we're going flat, it doesn't say anything. And then, of course, the more interesting scenario and how it pressures the market, given this positive correlation we've noted of late in treasuries and equities in the U.S., it would be if yields rise sharply again. And then the FOMC minutes, not expecting much there. We'd just look for anything talking about X number of members, whether that's several or a few or whatever the language is, getting maybe a bit more uncomfortable with the scale of inflation. And then I'm really curious on the asset purchase side, when they start to signal maybe a weakening commitment to MBS purchases, which look out of touch with a U.S. housing market that's absolutely on fire. But I'm not getting my hopes up for drama, but I'll, of course, be looking through those minutes tonight. Chinese rate announcement overnight, they're not expected to do anything. And then Australia, very sensitive potentially to a weak unemployment rate or employment change report, as the RBA is clearly focusing on the labor market. For direction at its July meeting, where it may have a extension or not of that yield curve control policy in play there. So watch out for that. That'll be it for today. And we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.